This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions, online at www.bgov.com, and of course on the air right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And the rollout of healthcare.gov has been plagued with issues from the word go. It was used as a platform for the Republican Party to kind of hold up as a failure, a complete failure, they said. They actually used it as a pawn to shut down the government for a little while, trying to make the president take it back, so to speak. The good intention law has now turned into a constant headache for the administration due to the well-documented technical issues. Those issues will likely throw off the math behind the Affordable Care Act and its success. Someone who's been following this very closely is Bloomberg Government senior healthcare analyst Matt Berry with an analysis, Billions of Insurers Ride on Exchange Enrollment, and he joins me now. How are you?
I'm doing good, Alan.
So the Congressional Budget Office is targeting about 7 million people to enroll. They say if we don't hit that magic number, 7 million people, the world will collide. We will fall apart.
It will be over as we know it.
So basically the math behind what they've done thus far will not work. And it will not necessarily be the Affordable Care Act anymore.
Well, I mean, there's issues of affordability and there's issues of who's going to enroll. I mean, okay. I think they do go hand in hand, but they can be separate. I mean, there's what's affordable to an actuary, mm-hmm. and there's what's affordable to the average citizen who is eligible for this program. You know, in the context, if you're earning $25,000 a year and you're just out of school, maybe in your mid-20s, and you're looking at a monthly budget, even an austere one, having to come up with a couple hundred dollars for premiums is not easy to do and stay afloat financially. So it's a hard choice. As far as the CBO's estimates, yes, they estimated 7 million people enrolling in this first year. In their defense, I mean, this was before all the technical problems have raised their ugly head over the past month. And it'll be interesting to see if CBO chooses to revisit those estimates as a result, because it is certainly going to be more difficult for CMS and all the insurers that are playing in the different markets to meet those targets at this point.
So
it's not insurmountable, but it makes it more difficult.
And those targets need to be reached by the end of March 2014, when the enrollment period ends. 1.17 million people need to sign up on average per month from October to March for this math to work out the way they've estimated it.
Yes.
At this point.
Yes.
Not on track for that at all.
Well, it's probably unlikely. Yeah. I mean, right now CMS is playing it very close to the vest. They say they are not going to be releasing any official enrollment numbers until mid-November for the month of October.
Right.
There's been various press reports and reports of some state enrollment figures. It's hard to say right now. I mean, it's hard to imagine, given the scope and breadth of the technical problems, that they're going to meet those targets, at least in the first month. And more importantly is whether they fix those problems and can kind of get this thing back on track and repair a lot of the optics of this and the PR piece of this, because I think that's what they're losing ground on right now in terms of convincing people that this is a good idea. You should, it's affordable. You should take advantage of this. I think that is getting drowned out by, both the substantive problems, but also when you get the Jon Stewarts of the world and the Saturday Night Lives mocking you on a daily basis, that really plays into, especially among younger demographics, mm-hmm. That are critical to helping this law succeed from a financial standpoint. If you're an insurer, you need those young invincibles to sign up for this law to compensate for the older and sicker among the population that are probably going to be a little more, have more perseverance in signing up for the law. and won't let the technical problems or the weights involved get in the way of them of them signing up.
We're pretty far down this rabbit hole at this point, obviously. This has been in the planning stages for quite some time. Supreme Court weighed in last summer. Everything is deemed constitutional. The president appears to be driving what I envision as a gigantic snowplow through a city filled with trash, going, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. There's nothing he can do about it at this point. He's kind of along for the ride now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is you're beyond the point of no return.
Right.
They've pushed that button a long time ago. So it's, you know, if you're the administration, this is the law of the land.
Right.
You have to try and make this work. Certainly, there are going to be continued efforts. I mean, you're seeing it, you know, this week on the Hill with the CMS administrator and Secretary Sebelius testifying. And, you know, there's going to be a very aggressive oversight agenda. I think probably Republicans are going to pivot from an effort to totally repeal this law like they did that led to the shutdown to one that is going to be very aggressive oversight and make things very, very difficult and uncomfortable for the administration. If they haven't already, make it even more so going forward.
Was the president fully informed throughout this entire process? Like, he wasn't aware of the issues. He thought everything was going to be up to par. Everybody was going to be good to go. Day one, let's hit it. Let's move forward. Let's get things going. Had he been more informed, do you think he would have listened to the Republicans a little bit more, saying, well, let's slow this down a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I certainly wouldn't expect the president to be getting daily IT reports on the progress of the website.
This is kind of his baby. You know, we're talking about the library now.
I think certainly if in hindsight, if there was a suspicion that the problems were going to be as significant as they have turned out to be, and someone ought to have brought that certainly to the attention of the CMS administrator and to Secretary Sebelius, and if they felt it warranted it, to certainly bring that to the attention of the White House.
Does he leave that to Congress to resolve, or is he now going to be the whipping boy behind the scenes and go, hey, look, guys, line up?
Well, I can't imagine he is particularly happy right now with the way this is going. So what's interesting is so far nobody's head has rolled yet in response to this problem. My guess is once at least the immediate crisis is resolved and things are running more smoothly, then there is going to be some people held accountable. But then it's going to be – then you get into a lot of other dynamics. I mean, a lot of people are calling for the secretary's resignation, but the reality is even if Sebelius was to be held accountable, then you have to think about, could there be a replacement? Could you get a replacement nominee through the Senate in this current environment?
Right.
So on some level, it's unlikely that is going to unfold unless this gets worse.
You just reminded me of Hurricane Katrina coming through. The FEMA, head of FEMA, bit the bullet during that one.
Yeah.
And you know, the president comes along and says, you're out. Bring a new guy in just to change the optics, make things a little bit better. That could potentially happen here.
It certainly could. I mean, certainly there isn't as immediate life and death circumstances.
Nothing changed, of course, in the way things were handled.
Sure.
Let's just change the head and make things look like we're working.
But for an administration, particularly when they're in campaign mode, that is as sophisticated as they have been with the optics, with the PR aspects of what they say and do, this has been a series of stumbles that is very surprising.
You mentioned a series of stumbles. News came out earlier this week about the potential of millions of people losing their benefits because under the new Affordable Care Act, the plans don't necessarily meet the criteria and are not legal now. So something that the administration says, we kind of knew about that.
Well,
another bad opportunity there.
Well, definitely. I think this is where, you know, the words on a campaign trail come back to bite them. What sounds good in a 3-second sound bite, you know, everybody can keep your coverage and we won't touch that. If you don't want to change it,
then
you're fine. But if, you know, for anyone who has taken the time to read the law, and albeit a lot of people have not, and I don't necessarily encourage it necessarily, but for the people who know the law, this is not a surprise. What is surprising is that the administration is being caught off guard again on something else, that people are reacting to this, because from the insurer's standpoint, they don't have a choice. they have to terminate these insurance plans in order to come into compliance with the law. And certainly then the consumers are going to, you know, have problems with that. I mean, certainly the insurers are going to try and recoup these people and put them into other programs or plans that meet that satisfy the criteria of the law, because they don't want to lose that revenue source. But there's also, you know, I think people's memories can be short in terms of realizing that in this individual marketplace, you can be dropped up until now, you could have been dropped at a moment's notice, and your premiums were likely increasing at a double-digit clip every year for the past decade or more. So the thought that they're looking at possibly another premium increase shouldn't be surprising, but given the rhetoric that was given to this issue by the administration and the rollout and the campaign trail, you can certainly understand the pushback that's happening right now.
An opportunity for press secretary potentially to come in and go, by the way, you know, that was a soundbite. Here's what we're talking. This is the nuts and bolts of what's happening. Someone like maybe you, Mr. Matthew Berry, join because the way you just presented it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
But most Americans are not going to get that story. They're going to hear the president drop the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's unfortunate. I mean, regardless of your views on the law, I mean, there's been a lot of hard work within the administration, especially among the civil service contingent that's been working, you know, endlessly for the past 3 years to get this thing in place and to kind of see it seemingly slip from their fingers at this final stage or have these problems come into view is it would be disconcerting if I was on that side of the fence.
What's next? End of March 2014 rolls around. We're looking at now rolling into April. Are we going to meet the numbers that have been set forth? Do you see a change? I'm asking you to look into your crystal ball now as Matthew Berry, senior healthcare analyst, MD.
Do my Carnac the Magnificent imitation.
Exactly. Do you see this turning out for the better? I mean, is the legacy tarnished? I mean, because this is his big, speaking about President Obama's, this is his big legacy statement now, and it's being whipped to no end at this point.
I mean, I think it just depends on how the next 4 to 6 weeks go. If they can resolve the vast majority of the user experience for consumers who go to the website, so that's more seamless, that they don't have these waits, they don't have all the technical problems. If they can resolve most, if not all of that, I think a lot of this is forgotten a year from now. It certainly is going to be more difficult for the enrollment projections or targets to be hit as the longer these problems linger and continue, which does translate into not just consumer loss, but also a business loss for insurers and providers who have been planning for years for this to happen and made a lot of investments and changes and made concessions early on to help support to support this law getting passed in the first place. And a lot of industries, insurers, hospitals, in the absence of more people with insurance are being faced with Medicare cuts that were in the law to help pay for that coverage.
Right.
So they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. And so it's
you've kind of got two options: you go out of business or merge.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be challenging for them to meet these targets, not impossible. But I think between now and Thanksgiving is really going to determine what happens there.
All right. Very good. His name is Matthew Berry. He's a senior healthcare analyst with Bloomberg Government. Make sure you read Billions for Insurers Ride on Exchange Enrollment. It's a big of insight. And it definitely breaks it down by the numbers. You know, according to the figures that Matt has provided, we're looking at, you know, almost a little bit more than half of what the Congressional Budget Office says they need per month is what we're getting at this point,
yep.
Provided the environment stays the way it is.
Yeah,
we have to wait and see.
Yes,
and I'm sure you'll be back to explain.
Absolutely, explain clearly and thoughtfully.
There you go. You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius testified before the House Health, Energy, and Commerce Committee earlier this week in Washington, D.C. Here's what she had to say.
Chairman Upton, Ranking Member Waxman, members of the committee, I left my position as governor of Kansas 4.5 years ago for the opportunity to continue work I've been doing for most of my over 35 years of public service, to expand the opportunities for all Americans, regardless of geography or gender or income, to have affordable health coverage. During my years as a state legislator, as an elected insurance commissioner, as head of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and as a two-term governor, and now as HHS secretary, I have worked on that effort that I care deeply about. There are still millions of Americans who are uninsured as well as underinsured, people who have some coverage at some price for some illness, but have no real protection from financial ruin and no real confidence they'll be able to take care of themselves and their families if they have an accident or an illness. And for them, a new day has finally come. In these early weeks, access to healthcare.gov has been a miserably frustrating experience for way too many Americans, including many who have waited years, in some cases their entire lives, for the security of health insurance. I am as frustrated and angry as anyone with the flawed launch of healthcare.gov. So let me say directly to these Americans, you deserve better. I apologize. I'm accountable to you for fixing these problems, and I'm committed to earning your confidence back by fixing the site. We're working day and night, and we'll continue until it's fixed. We've recently added new management talent, additional technical expertise, and a new general contractor to identify, prioritize, and manage fixes across the system in two broad categories: performance, which deals with speed and reliability, and function, which deals with bugs and problems in the system. Our extensive assessment has determined that healthcare.gov is fixable.
I'm watching these hearings, and I feel like it's extraordinary. You're seeing Secretary Sebelius take the blame. She's saying, blame me. Does that mean she's going to need to step down?
No, she won't step down. I'll tell you why, Stephanie. Not because she may not be culpable, but because if she steps down, you have to replace her. And the last thing in the world this administration wants to do is go through a whole new set of hearings, confirmation hearings, on whoever it is. They could pick, St. Francis of Assisi.
But is that fair? Look at what we see, what happens to corporate CEOs. Look at the Jamie Dimons of the world, and people are saying maybe this guy needs to step down.
Right.
Well, guess what? Kathleen Sebelius is the CEO of her business. And if she's not getting the job done, shouldn't the American people, shouldn't the president say, you got to go, lady, just because it's hard to replace her? That doesn't seem like a viable answer.
And she and Jamie are both staying, aren't they? She really is. I think there's almost no chance that they'll replace her, at least not in the next 6 months or so. I think she's lost a lot of credibility with the White House.
But what does that mean? So the White House is mad at you? Great.
Well, it means you're not going to have a lot of clout. I don't think she had that much to begin with. Jeff Zients has been brought in to run this thing because it wasn't run. They had 3 years to prepare for this, and they didn't prepare. Now, Jeff Zients is very talented. The question is, can you do in 5 weeks what you couldn't do in 3 years? And the other issue...
Wait, who is Jeff Zients?
Jeff Zients was a guy who was OMB director. He was an entrepreneur, venture capitalist, very smart, and very capable. But he's got a big task because there are other bigger issues, what we're hearing from this morning about people losing their insurance policies. But you can't address those issues until you have a site that works. So this is the sine qua non.
But why is he being brought in now? When you give me his resume, I'm impressed. I think, where was that guy 3 years ago? When many people are saying, how did they even decide we're going to go with this horse to build this system? Why? Where's the rationale behind that?
Well, what they said was all the parts worked, but the end-to-end didn't work. Well, I'm sorry. Who cares if the parts work? Nobody, it was the CEO, whoever it was, Kathleen Sebelius or the woman over at that center, they just did, there was no direction here. There was no responsibility. There was no one to say, we're going to make sure this works. It is inexcusable, Stephanie.
Is it because they gave the exclusive contract to them saying, here, let's just hand it off to you? When I built a house, I didn't deal with my subcontractors. I said, the guy I pay my big checks to, he's the guy in charge.
Yeah.
Now everyone's pointing pointing the finger at one another. That didn't work when I built a house. Why does that work in D.C.?
And when you build the house, you're going to make sure he's doing it right. You're going to check on him. This is what wasn't done here. It really is inexplicable, and they're paying a huge price for it. Now, if it works by December 15th, and if we have 7 million people sign up by April 1, and a healthy chunk of them are young, healthy people, then we'll address these other issues. And it may be that things on balance are better than they were before, but they have to get there first, and it's not at all clear they're going to get there.
What about the fact that the whole point this morning that these Republicans are going after, they're saying people are losing their health care. Kathleen Sebelius can't control that. The president is the one who said no one's going to lose their health care. So what do we do about this broader issue? Because people are.
Now, he clearly, the question is, if you lose your health care, do you get something that's as good or better? And if the answer is that most people don't, they're in, again, in deep trouble. The president clearly misspoke. He clearly should not have said no one loses their health care if you get it. But we're talking about people who are self-insured. You and I are in no danger of losing.
We've got great insurance, Al.
But we're talking about the self-insured, which I don't know.
But the self-insured might not want better, more deluxe insurance. They might want. We're talking about if I'm a 24-year-old in great health and I work at a startup, I might not want to spend the money on better health care. The president is saying I have to?
Well, or you pay a rather small fine. That's what happens. That's the way it works in Massachusetts. That's what happens with an individual mandate. I think the fine is pretty minimal. Most people, that 24, I have a 26-year-old, so I know that situation fairly well, and he's got to make a decision. He's probably better off buying a rather cheap policy right now.
How accountable should the president be?
He's the commander-in-chief.
Okay, he's the commander-in-chief, but what blame does he really have to take? I mean, I bring it back to Jamie Dimon. We don't let Jamie Dimon say, I run a big company, I didn't know this was going to happen on my watch. Why do we let the president say these things?
Well, I'm not sure the situations aren't analogous. I think in both cases, Jamie Dimon is paying a price with reputation, maybe with investors, certainly with reputation, and Barack Obama is paying a price on reputation, which affects other things. It's going to be harder for him to succeed in other areas because of the hit he's taking in this, unless they turn it around. But right now, he is taking a clear hit, Stephanie, and he'll pay a price for that.
Things weren't all fine and dandy after Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius made that apology during her prepared statement. In fact, got downright testy as Rep. Marsha Blackburn, a Republican from Tennessee, called her to task on the insurers in her state of Florida whose policies were now deemed illegal.
Before, during, and after the law was passed, the president kept saying, if you like your health care plan, you can keep it. So is he keeping his promise?
Yes, he is.
Okay. What do you say to the 300,000 people in Florida you just mentioned, or to the 28,000 in Tennessee that cannot get health insurance? Their plans are terminated. Is he keeping his promise to them?
Well, first of all, Congresswoman, they can get health insurance. They must be offered new plans, new options, either inside the marketplace, or if they don't qualify for a financial subsidy, they can shop in
what
or out of the marketplace. They absolutely will have new coverage.
What do you say to NBC News, who says millions are going to lose their coverage?
Well, in all deference to the press corps, many of whom are here today, I think that it's important to be accurate about what is going on, and I would defer again to the president of the Blues Plan.
Reclaiming
people
my
will
time.
Have ongoing coverage. They will be offered new plans.
Madam Secretary, let me tell you
in the
something.
Market now will qualify.
What do
for
you say
subsidy?
To Mark and Lucinda in my district, who had a plan, they liked it, it was affordable, but it is being terminated, and now they do not have health insurance.
Insurance companies cancel individual policies year in and year out. They are one-year contract with individuals.
Okay.
They are not lifetime plans.
Let me,
they are not an employer plan. Your
let me move. Let me move on. It's what they wanted, and I will remind you. Some people like to drive a Ford, not a Ferrari, and some people like to drink out of a red Solo cup, not a crystal stem. You're taking away their choice.
And with that, we wrap up this week's edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.